So our reading today is taken from Luke's Gospel. That's on page 1025 of the Bibles in front of your seats, page 1025. And it's Luke chapter 1. We're reading from verses 5 to 25. The birth of John the Baptist foretold. Luke chapter 1, verse 5, page 1025. In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah, who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife, Elizabeth, was also a descendant of Aaron. Both of them were upright in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commandments and regulations blamelessly. But they had no children, because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both well on in years. Once, when Zechariah's division was on duty, and he was serving as priest before God, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And when the time came for the burning of incense, all the assembled worshippers were praying outside. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing on the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to give him the name John. He will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or other fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even from birth. Many of the people of Israel will he bring back to the Lord their God. And he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." Zechariah asked the angel, "How can I be sure of this? I'm an old man and my wife is well on in years." The angel answered, "I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to tell you this good news. And now you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true at their proper time." Meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah and wondering why he stayed so long in the temple. When he came out, he could not speak to them. They realized he had seen a vision in the temple, for he kept making signs to them but remained unable to speak. When his time of service was completed, he returned home. After this, his wife Elizabeth became pregnant and for 5 months remained in seclusion. "The Lord has done this for me," she said. "In these days, he has shown his favor and taken away my disgrace among the people." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, two, please take a seat. If you're in Ignite AM, school years 7, 8 and 9, it's time for you to head out. And we're going to be looking at that reading we had from Luke chapter 1 together, starting a series following Luke's account of Christmas. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe tells the story of four children who are evacuated from Finchley, just around the N25, during the Second World War, and they're sent to live with a professor in the countryside. You'll probably know the story. They're playing hide and seek in the professor's house when Lucy hides in a wardrobe. She climbs into the wardrobe and she walks backwards through all these coats, and suddenly she feels snow. She's found the magical land of Narnia. The thing is, when she comes back to the house and tells all her siblings about it, she's very sad to discover that they don't believe her. This goes on for a little bit, and her oldest two siblings, Peter and Susan, decide to go and speak to the professor about what's going on with Lucy. And here is how it goes in the most recent Disney adaptation.
"She thinks she's found a magical land in the upstairs wardrobe."
"What did you say?"
"The wardrobe upstairs." Lucy thinks she's found a forest inside.
She won't stop going on about it.
What was it like?
Like talking to a lunatic.
No, not her, the forest.
You're not saying you believe her.
You don't?
Well, of course not. I mean, logically, it's impossible.
What do they teach in schools these days?
Edmund said they were only pretending.
And he's usually the more truthful one, is he?
No. This would be the first time.
Well, if she's not mad and she's not lying, then logically, we must assume she's telling the truth.
You're saying...
You don't believe her, do you? Peter says. In the book, after they've explained what's going on, the first thing the professor says is, how do you know that your sister's story is not true? Of course, it's difficult to believe things that seem unbelievable. Peter, Susan, they don't want to believe it. It seems too unbelievable. It's hard to believe the unbelievable. That's how Zechariah feels in the reading we just had. The angel Gabriel appears to him and tells him things that seem unbelievable. Too good to be true. I guess we all know that feeling, don't we, of hearing things that are too good to be true. We don't want to believe them. Whether it's the Aston Martin that Nick's hoping for Christmas. Sorry, Nick, that's probably too good to be true. Whether it's the end of war in the world. Too good to be true. Perhaps it's just a Christmas in your family without any fighting. Seems too good to be true. In 1989, Billy Joel released the hit single, We Didn't Start the Fire, cataloguing the things in the world that cause this burning. The world's been burning since the world's been turning, and it means that things that seem too good usually aren't true. That we live in a world full of burning. This year, actually, the band Fall Out Boy released a cover covering newsworthy items from 1989 to this year, because the world keeps burning. And so things that seem too good, well, they can't be true, can they? We don't want to believe the unbelievable. But the angel Gabriel appears to Zechariah and tells him and wants us to hear today that hope is here. This too good to be true news is, in fact, true. We're going to consider that together today. Luke begins his book in the first four verses, which we didn't read, setting out his stall. He's gathered eyewitness accounts of what's happened in the life of Jesus, and he's brought them all together to write a biography of Jesus' life. In verse 5, he gets going with the story. It's the time of Herod. King Herod, a puppet king of the Roman Empire, in the land of Israel. That puts us in around 34 to 40 BC. That's Herod's reign. So we're somewhere in there. And we're introduced to a priest named Zechariah and his wife Elizabeth. We're told that they're upright in the sight of God. They're righteous people. It says they're blameless in observing God's commandments. But we're also told they had no children because Elizabeth was barren. And they were both well on in years. That word barren probably feels a bit cutting and sharp to us. We wouldn't normally use a word like that. We wouldn't normally label a woman barren or even infertile. We prefer in our culture and our time to describe those sorts of things. She's unable to have children. There's good reasons for doing that, but not every time and culture is the same. And here in the Bible, we read that Elizabeth was barren. Either way, then and now, it's a source of shame. Today, we're looking to get rid of the stigma, the societal shame related to it. But nevertheless, to a woman, even to a man who experiences infertility, it is a source of inner shame. And for Elizabeth, in first century Israel, it is a source of societal shame. In verse 25, she describes it as her disgrace. But this verse, Luke chapter 1, verse 7, is also supposed to sound for us the note of hope. Hope is here. How? Well, there are five women before Elizabeth in the Bible who've been described as barren, using that same word. First, there was Abraham's wife, Sarah. then Isaac's wife Rebekah, Jacob's wife Rachel, the wife of Manoah in Judges, and Hannah in 1 Samuel. What happened to all those five women who were called barren? God gave them a baby. And so as we read on in Luke chapter 1, we should be expecting to find a baby. The barren woman is going to have a baby. The sound of hope is in the air as Gabriel speaks to Zechariah. Hope is here. It sounds too good, but it is true. Zechariah would have been one of about 18,000 priests in Israel at the time. And that meant that they all served in divisions, as verse 8 tells us. And each division, Zechariah would have been on the rota to serve in the temple about twice a year. Perhaps that sounds like a good amount of time for your rota turn to come up twice a year. But he would only have been chosen by lot to go into the temple and offer the incense once. That's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Once you'd done it, you were taken off the list. You couldn't be chosen again. And of course, with 18,000 priests, many never got the chance at all. But here comes Zechariah's turn to go in. And what he finds in there is not a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, but a once-in-a-blue-moon occurrence. An angel of the Lord appears to him and speaks to him. Perhaps you sort of imagine that the Bible's full of people hearing direct speech from God, angels appearing to people all the time. That's not the case. Most people in the nation of Israel never heard from God directly, never saw an angel. It happened to a very few, small number of people, and it's documented for us in the Bible. But it happens to Zechariah here, and the angel identifies himself in verse 19 as the angel Gabriel, a famous angel. But he actually only appears four times in the Bible. Here in Luke 1, he speaks to Zechariah. Over the page, again in Luke 1, he'll speak to Mary. That's why he's so famous, because he tells Mary about her baby. He's appeared twice before in the book of Daniel. And every time the angel Gabriel has appeared to a person, they've had the same response: fear. They've been afraid. Perhaps if your sort of first mental image of an angel is of a little girl in a white sheet, then you might wonder why that's so scary. This one might produce a bit more fear. There we go. There's our angel Gabriel. I was from No Room at the Inn last night. Zechariah is filled with fear, but Gabriel says to him, "Do not fear." Why? Verse 13, "Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to give him the name John." No doubt, Zechariah has been praying for a son. But also in his role as a priest, it would have been his job to pray for the salvation of Israel. Which prayer is in view? It's hard to tell because both are answered. Zechariah is told that his wife will have a son, but he's also told in verse 16 that that son will bring many people of Israel back to the Lord their God, and he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. The first time the angel Gabriel appeared in the book of Daniel, he told Daniel about the coming destruction of God's people. Here he appears in Luke to tell Zechariah about the coming restoration of God's people. Hope is here. In The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, C.S. Lewis has this famous description of what it's like to live in Narnia under the rule of the White Witch. The fawn Mr. Tumnus tells Lucy, "It's always winter and never Christmas." Always winter and never Christmas. What a powerful image. And that's why, as the book goes on, and these two sons of Adam and these two daughters of Eve arrive, and people hear that Aslan's on the move, hope fills the creatures of Aslan, of Narnia. Mr. Beaver is ecstatic, and Peter and Susan find it a bit odd. Why is he so excited? Because hope is here. It's been always winter and never Christmas, and now Santa's in town, and Aslan's on the move. Every wrong is going to be put right. And that is how we should feel here. The angel Gabriel says, hope is here, and his name is John. Wonder if you sort of felt that. Luke starts his biography of Jesus by talking about a different baby. We're expecting a baby, but this is a different one. This is John. Why? Why does Luke start like this? Well, he's picking up where the Old Testament left off. God hasn't spoken directly to his people for just over 400 years. Gabriel appearing to Zechariah is the first word from God in 400 years, but the last word from God, where the Old Testament left off, came in the end of the book of Malachi, where God says to his people, see, I will send you the prophet Elijah before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to their fathers. Elijah's a famous Old Testament prophet. He was a prophet of reform under one of the most evil kings in Israel's history, the king Ahaz, married to Jezebel. There's a famous story where Elijah confronts the prophets of Baal, their god, and they both have an altar, and he says, go on, prophets of Baal, ask Baal to set fire to this altar. And Baal can't do it because Baal isn't real. But Elijah pours water all over his altar and then says, Lord, bring fire. And he does, and it sets on fire. But Elijah also is famous because he didn't die. He was taken up into heaven. And God says in Malachi that he's going to send Elijah back or send someone to complete the work of Elijah. And that's what Gabriel says John is going to do. Elijah confronted Ahaz. John would go on to confront Herod, and he'd lose his head for it. He'd lead religious reform in Israel, and he would prepare, verse 17, the way for the Lord. If you've been doing the Comfort and Joy Advent devotional a lot of us have been doing, in Isaiah 40, you would have read that phrase, one who prepares the way for the Lord. Here he is. It's John. He's a forerunner to make ready a people. You see, in verse 15 and 17, Luke makes a sort of play on the way, Lord. Verse 15, he says that John will be great in the sight of the Lord God in heaven. In verse 17, he says he'll make ready a people prepared for the Lord to come into the world. God incarnate here to dwell, Jesus our Emmanuel. He's coming, and John is going to make a people prepared for him. Hope is here, but Zechariah, verse 18, doesn't believe it. How can I be sure of this? I'm an old man and my wife is well on in years. Of course he doesn't believe it. How can he believe something so unbelievable? It sounds too good to be true. That, of course, is the whole success of the Hallmark Christmas movie market. Things that are too good to be true. A little dose of unreality. A world where everything is good and everything does work out right or the way we want it to. But of course, they're successful because it takes us out of real life, where too often the world is burning. Even the nicest things, the most wonderful time of the year, is marred by things going wrong. But Luke cries out to us in chapter 1 of his biography of Jesus, hope is here. I mentioned those five Old Testament women who were called barren. Well, Luke includes a little reference to each one of them in this little passage. In verse 13, the angel says, your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to give him the name John. That's exactly what an angel said to Abraham. The same words, with different names. He says that your prayer has been answered. Well, Isaac prays for his wife Rebecca when she's barren, and the Lord answers that prayer and gives her a baby. A little reference there to them. Elizabeth's response at the end of the passage in verse 25, in these days God has shown his favor and taken away my disgrace among the people. Well, that's exactly what Rachel says when God gives her a child. And this, what might seem a slightly odd reference in the middle of verse 15 to the fact that John will never drink alcohol, is sort of a reference to a vow for a holy child to make, which echoes what happens with Samson in Judges and with Samuel. References to these five barren women. Hope is here. Here is another barren woman who's going to have a baby. And whilst the last barren born baby, Samuel, he prepared the way for King David, the great king of Israel. Well, now John will prepare the way for David's ancestor. We've seen an elderly lady who's unable to conceive, have a baby, but then we're going to see a young woman who's never even tried, have her own baby. And he would not just be great in the sight of the Lord, he would be the Lord. And whilst God removed Elizabeth's disgrace by giving her John, well, God gave the world his son to remove all of our sin and shame and disgrace. Each of us will be aware of ways in which we've contributed to that fire. The world's been burning since the world's been turning, and we're all culpable in our own ways. Perhaps the thing that seems too good to be true to you is that God would want you, God would love you, that God would want you to be one with him. But the angel Gabriel says, hope is here. This is your invitation to believe the unbelievable. Of course, the virgin birth just is unbelievable, isn't it? It's perhaps the most unbelievable claim of Christianity. Let me ask you to think that if it's too unbelievable to believe in the virgin-born baby who follows John, the barren-born baby, and it's therefore too unbelievable to believe in the God who created everything out of nothing, then I think you're left with one equally or perhaps more unbelievable belief. If you don't want to believe in the virgin-born baby and the creator God, then I think you're left to believe in a virgin-born universe. A universe that came out of nothing all by itself. Perhaps you prefer that. It means that what you see is what there is. But it also means that what you see is all there ever will be. It's been said that the optimist proclaims that we live in the best of all possible worlds, and the pessimist fears this is true. The world's been burning since the world's been turning, and Luke invites you to believe the unbelievable, that hope is here, that what sounds too good is, in fact, true. That, of course, is what Nick and Lucy believe. They've brought Daisy today to dedicate her to the Lord and have promised to raise her to know and love Jesus, because they believe that what's too good is, in fact, true. At the end of that clip we saw earlier on, the professor says to Peter and to Susan, either your sister is telling lies, or she is mad, a lunatic, deluded, or she is telling the truth. Now, perhaps some of you do think Nick and Lucy are a bit mad, but I trust you don't really think they're actually deluded. Would you go that far to say that? And I know you don't think that they're liars. Have you considered, will you consider this Christmas the possibility that they're telling the truth? Will you take up this invitation to believe the unbelievable, to grasp onto this too good to be true news, which is in fact true? Hope is here. The barren-born baby John will prepare the way for the virgin-born Lord, who is pleased with man, pleased as man with man to dwell. Mild he lays his glory by, born that man no more may die, to take away our sin and shame and to bring us to God.